Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to Experience Focused Leaders. So this weekend, I was on Audible reading a book written by our guest, Rob Snyder. The book is called The Power of Pull, and it will blow your mind if you're an MBA graduate, undergrad business graduate, a graduate of many startup accelerator programs, and general consumer of business knowledge on how do you actually go to market with a new offering. Rob, over to you, and tell us about the book and why you wrote it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The book is the result of a lot of pain. When I came out of Harvard for my MBA, I thought I knew how business worked. I worked at McKinsey before, and so I wanted to start a startup, raise some money, did all the things you're supposed to do, and then just got punched in the face for years when it didn't work, but it made sense that it should work. And then we took off, went 0 to 4 million revenue in 2 years, and I didn't understand why it worked then. It, like, everything seemed objectively worse. And so since that moment, I've been pulled into a bunch of other startups, usually ones that are near death, right? Like they have also hit their head against the wall for years and try to figure out how to make startups take off. And so I've done that like hundreds of times now. And the book is the result of like what I have learned, the red pills I have taken on the journey to figure out why startups actually take off.
Well, I salute you. I didn't go to as prestigious schools or, consulting programs, but roughly similar outcome. You know, whatever business school you attend to, there tends to be like some mannerisms that come out in startup lingo that you don't really know what they mean exactly, or you think you do, but that you don't really. And it's like, so even great organizations like Y Combinator have words like, you know, build something people love, you know, and we hear a story about company called Lovable, which you know, and you know, they must be that they build something that people love and they figure it out. And so we make these assumptions from the conventional wisdom about what actually works. It tends to be a little bit more product centric. A lot of people start with a technology or product people building stuff. And I think your approach is, you know, quite clearly different. It starts with unlocking and unblocking something inside customer. So tell us about the pull framework that you've developed and created, and, you know, how does it work? And then we'll get in and start testing live examples of where it works and where it doesn't.
Yeah, I love it. So maybe let me walk you to the pull framework of the like unlearnings that I had to go through. Cause yeah, we come out of these programs, we read the startup books, we read the like YC mantra, and we're like, okay, I think I know why startups take off. We have a lot of plausible sounding reasons for why startups take off. They've built something people want. They've found a big problem. They've found big pain points. They've added a ton of value in ROI. All of those things make a ton of sense and are totally wrong. Like totally, totally wrong. And if you pursue them, what happens is you go looking for a pain point, you go looking for a problem, you'll find one. You'll do a bunch of discovery interviews, you'll do some experiments, and people are like, yeah, big problem, huge 10 out of 10 problem, massive ROI, you'll have objective ROI, and then nobody will buy your product, or it'll be a slog to sell it to like a couple people, and it won't make sense why. And that's because just these
And then on top of it, once you sell it, it may not even get implemented properly because... Only one person cares, and that one person may be gone in a year's time,
And
and
you
then
feel like you're
you're churned.
pushing,
You all that
yeah.
work, you've churned to something, right?
All that work, and you build something that's like objectively valuable, technologically impressive. You've raised money of this massive vision, and the world doesn't care. The world just doesn't, and it
But I
just
have my
feels.
TechCrunch article.
I
I have my
know.
TechCrunch article. I must be doing something
And
right.
you went through YC, and you went and you did all this stuff, and it's just you. It feels every single day like you're pushing a boulder up a mountain. And everybody you talk to will, and it feels like you're getting gaslit too, because you'll talk to people and they'll be like, wow, this is amazing. This is so interesting, so valuable.
Rob,
But for
you were
me,
McKinsey and HBS. Yeah, I,
yeah.
but I'm sorry.
Oh, and then they won't buy, but they'll say things that sound like they're gonna buy, which will, oh, I could see how useful this would. And so, right, like all of this is at the root, we don't know why people buy things, which is a crazy thing for me to say, but it's the truth. We don't actually know. People don't buy things because they have pain points. That's just like not the case. They don't buy things because they have problems. They don't buy things because the things offer value, right? You can, that's one way to look at these, but I've found that in every single case where a startup has taken off or when somebody actually buys things, there's a different explanation of why they buy things, which I call pull. And that's where the pull framework comes from, which is far more of a true description of what you're looking for in their mind, in their world, than a pain point, a problem, offer of ROI or value. And so I walk you through that, the kind of core thing, the reason pain points and problems don't work is because you have a ton of pain points and problems throughout your day, throughout your life, and you mostly do nothing about them. So if you find a pain point that's annoying, even a really, really big pain point, by default, they're not going to do anything about it because we're focused on the wrong thing. What we need to be focused on is the thing I'm trying to do. The you could think of this as a job to be done if we're talking like product development, but it's I'm trying to do something. It's more of a project on my to-do list that I'm prioritizing right now. So it has to be action shaped. And then if I'm trying to do something and my existing tools, options, methods are good enough, right? I'm not going to buy your product. So it needs to have these two components, which is I need to be trying to do something. And my existing options are not good enough to do that thing where it's almost like a force pressing against a wall. I'm being held back. And only in that situation will somebody buy something. They will pull it out of your hands. That's what the concept of pull.
So one I'm thinking of one of framework. Sorry, I know you're a Harvard man, but Stanford came out was BJ Fogg's framework, which is about kind of combining motivation and kind of ease of doing something. So I want to do something. I have a project. I have a it's easy to do, right? That fits a little bit in your framework of like doable. And then there's a trigger. And the trigger could be my own, like I think like a lot of times we think the trigger is like something external. Yeah, Alex shows up and tells you about how the world will be different. But what you're saying is the trigger is like this is your internal, like the really important dimension is the trigger is your internal thing, because you have to do this every time, and every time you do it, it frustrates you. And so of all the things that you're motivated to do, it kind of stays as at a top priority of your list. And then the reason you haven't been doing is because you thought it was difficult, right? The alternatives are not great. It's felt like it's complex. And so what I hear you're saying is like kind of as you must do this thing, the next level is like, well, you're reducing the complexity and blockage from somebody doing it. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't like the kind of like ease of doing the thing, right? Like that's not the exact way that I would describe it, because I've seen in many cases where it's like I'm trying to do something, but the existing option is actually too cheap and too like they're in a lot of software companies, if you're selling enterprise, the like cheap PLG option is not an option, is not perceived as an option in the enterprise,
Yeah,
right?
okay.
And so it's more about the existing options don't work for me for some reason. And that reason, maybe it's too easy. Maybe it's too hard. Maybe it's too expensive. Maybe it's too cheap. It could be a variety of different
Right,
things.
right. So just the main theme is that like the current set of things that I'm aware of do doesn't work.
Yes.
Okay. And then how often do you find that, especially for new products, when you when people start looking for the solution to this, it feels like, at least from my perspective, sometimes the things that are inbound, that are coming into your business, they are a little bit easier, because clearly somebody has enough of a problem to kind of research something, right? Like what they want to do. They clearly don't have in-house an existing solution, and somehow it's a sign that if they're reaching out, they're already further on this journey. Is that true? What have you found? Like
Sometimes.
sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes. What I would say, so the really important thing, probably the most important thing that I have learned about startups and about the world is that pull thing that we talked about. They're trying to do something and they're stuck. They're blocked by their
Yeah.
existing options aren't good enough.
Yeah.
That exists independent of your startup existing. That is just a thing that's happening in their world. And so if they show up inbound, and that's present in their lives. They're trying to do something, they're blocked, they've done research, they show up, they're going to buy very fast. But
Okay.
if they show up and that's not present in their world, they're going to waste your time. They're going to ask a
And
bunch of
why would they
questions.
show up? Why would they show up? Why else do people show up on these things? Like,
Oh, I've seen the most absurd things come inbound. It's like,
yeah.
oh, I heard about the product and I thought I'd sign up for a demo because I thought I'd be interested.
Right.
Like it's I've seen stuff like that all the time.
Self-education, so
Self-education.
self-education, looking for a
Self-education. I saw it
job,
at a conference. I'm looking for a job. I'm just curious, right? There's so many reasons people can kind of like press the schedule
And
a
with AI
demo
right
thing.
now, it feels like everybody's a little paranoid about what's going on out there. So there's the sort of some people that have the time may have more curiosity. Is that kind of a way of thinking? Okay.
Totally. And but it's always been the case. This is why when you like take a demo call like Salesforce or any of these kind of like big companies, you'll realize that like the first 15 minutes or the first call they do is to explicitly disqualify you. Like that's when you go inbound from it, they're just like, are you sure you have money? Are you sure? Right. And it's because inbound is like, yeah, ideally inbound you have, but there are what we're looking for is the person trying to do something and stuck who needs help. And that person may come inbound, or you can find that person outbound as well. But it doesn't really matter the source. What matters is finding the person trying and stuck. That person will rip a product out of your hands. If that's not present, it would be weird if they bought from you. It's not impossible, but it would be weird.
Got it. So, love the framework, and I think we kind of let's just nail the framework, and then we'll start digging in. So, P is for
P is for project.
cool
The
project. Okay,
P is for
U
project,
is
like a
for
U is
inevitable,
for
like it must happen, right?
yeah,
Unavoidable.
unavoidable.
Yeah.
L is for list of options,
Okay.
and the second L is for limitations. So
Right.
there's a project that you're prioritizing right now, and your list of options has limitations that prevent you from getting the project done.
And I like that in the book, you're generally bundling the first two steps go together, and the second two steps go together a little bit. So it's easier kind of to follow that. So let's say, I would imagine majority of what you're kind of worked this through is in the B2B context, although I could imagine this works broadly,
I've actually done a bunch of B2C as well,
B2C as
recently.
well. But let's say we're moving into the enterprise B2B universe. The enterprise B2B universe is a little bit messier when it comes to single person having kind of an unavoidable needs, because that person may have a great problem, but may absolutely not be in control of any budget, may not have
Correct.
known how to buy anything inside their company, which is its own, like in some companies, like that's kind of you need to get that person first that gets you in somehow, gets you on a card, and then you actually they need to find another person
Yes.
who has the same problem, who actually knows how to get this approved, which I remember was really bizarre for me. But that's we almost had two of these people when we had to get into the sales force as a startup, and they're both innovators, but one actually knew how to get, use for data security and all the processes to get it done,
Yeah.
and the other was kind of on the periphery of that, but maybe had a concrete needs, right? So I like in my experience, and that's kind of an easy ish one, right? And then there's some organizations that are broadly just kind of through the fact that they're in regulated industries, have popping up AI committees of people that are figuring out what AI is and like are incentivized not to do anything almost
Yes.
inside there. There's just a lot of friction that happens despite best intentions. How do you navigate through that?
Yeah, that I like the word friction that you use there. So we have to think in terms of physics here. And for a deal to get done in a smaller or mid-sized business, the physics of that deal, or like you find the CEO or the VP of whatever, and that person has pull. They're trying to get something done, they're stuck. And so they pull you in, and the buying process is you send a Stripe link or whatever, like something like that. As you go into bigger businesses, into enterprises, I've helped one of the startups I've helped, they pre-product, pre-sale, like pre anything, they sold into enterprise, into like a Fortune 100 media company that we both know, and the deal was like from cold outbound on LinkedIn, closed in 2 months. And it's just like, okay, that's interesting. What I've found enterprise is that the physics are the exact same. You have to find the person who has pull. That person is going to exert the effort internally to get the deal done. However, because it's enterprise, there is so much more friction that that person has to go to that often they have to recruit additional people onto your team, onto the team to purchase it. And so, right, like we have to kind of separate the fact that there is the person who has pull who's going to cause the deal to happen. And then all the other things that have to happen as a result of all the friction that are trying to prevent the deal from happening. It's the same core physics. There's just you need to have more pull with that person. And often they need to recruit a couple other people and they have to genuflect 47 times at different committees or whatever to get the deal done. But you're
Well, and
helping that person.
it's interesting. I would almost like my experience has been that sometimes the person that's most interested and has the problem maybe in like could be your champion very much, but they're not going to be the one pulling, right? You don't want them pulling. You want them to get you to the person that could actually be doing the
Yes.
pulling, and that could be their role and the nature of the challenge, right? Like, but you still need that help to get to the person with the pull. So I'm often asking, like, who are the people in your organization who would are in the same wavelengths as you, but actually have like the more of incentives to get this
Yeah.
across, right? And like, and so they is that what you're finding as well in the whole, like, it's not the first person you get into the enterprise that will be the champion all the time, right?
Yeah, so I basically think of it as like finding the person who has pull, who can like exert the force internally productively. And so if it's not the first person you talk to, the whole goal of that conversation is, yeah, to get that person
To get to
excited,
that
but
person.
also to
So that's
get
not,
to that person. Yeah.
right. Got it. So yeah, that's just kind of just networking basically, up until you find who that person is. That's just and
Just
how do you
it's
think
yeah.
about pilots that help you get to that person, right? I think there's a lot of The one of the ways of thinking about this, I think, that's changed is in the AI world, obviously the friction of doing something with the product is lower than it used to be. And so there's still complexity around mock-ups and demos and ways to activate things, but I think it's less prominent than it used to be, and I think it's becoming probably harder to buy in a PowerPoint, in many cases than it used to be. Like, that's just pattern matching, right? Like, we'll see, right? But I think logically, it would be in the world where you are no longer as constrained by a mock-up. A mock-up is better than or something real is better than a slide of that mock-up, which is what used to be done before. So what are your thoughts on this?
What's interesting is I think once you understand pull, your understanding of sale, it just changes how you think about the physics of sales. And so what I've seen is that of the startups I help, I'd say I eliminate 90 to 100% of their demos.
Interesting.
And I eliminate 90 to 100% of their POCs or pilots or whatever. And what they typically come in thinking is that the demo or the pilot are the main character of the sales process. And so we have to structure the call to focus on the demo. We have to create a tailored demo with their data to do da 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 da. We have to do a pilot to prove that people will use the product or whatever it winds up being. And those things all obviously sound right. They make a ton of sense. But they're almost always entirely backwards. And the sales process works way better when you cut out the demo almost entirely, when you cut out the pilot almost entirely, and only include the things that are absolutely necessary. So let's say I'll give like an anonymized example. There's a startup in Europe that sells into big insurance agencies. And they sell something that helps analyze insurance policies. We'll just say roughly, AI that helps do that. And what they originally found is they were doing what most of us do, which is like, okay, cool. I'm gonna do a little bit of discovery on the sales call. I'm gonna show you the product and how awesome it is and how it works. And then we're gonna ask for a pilot. We're gonna propose a pilot where you can get users using it and prove the value internally and da 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 da. Right? And that's like 6, 12 plus month sales cycles is just like default there. That's what we think of. 12, maybe even 18 month sales cycles
Especially, I
for
would
that.
say in insurance, they're like they just love
Yeah.
POCs. This is
They
like
love.
their, it's
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
innovation tourism a little bit, for large
Totally.
corporates. Okay, got it.
But we've changed it, and their sales cycle is now under 3 months, and they've
And how,
almost
what did you
entirely
do?
eliminated.
So what's the first thing that happens in that first meeting?
Yeah, so in the first meeting, what they're trying to figure out is the discovery is not focused on pain points or problems anymore. It's focused on pull. What are you trying to do? What have you tried? Why isn't that good enough? Right? And it's almost always, we've tried to use AI to in, we've tried to use Microsoft Copilot to analyze these insurance documents, and it's kind of right, but it's not super accurate. And so we don't really use it internally. Okay, cool.
Got it.
And it's like, okay, cool. But what you're trying to do here is you're trying to reduce the amount of time from 40 hours or 2 weeks to re review these policies down to 10 minutes, right? Like that's what everyone's trying to do. Okay, great. That's exactly what we do. Here's a quick demo, 30-second demo of how it works. And then like pull it. First, it's like a description of what it is. Then it's the tiniest little demo that only shows a tiny little piece of it that just makes it click. Anything they show more than that causes more questions that are unproductive. And so it's this tiny 30-second
And it's
demo.
the 30 seconds is has to be exactly tied to the project that they have,
Yes. Yes,
because
yes, yes.
otherwise it distracts,
Otherwise, it's
and it,
entirely
so like it
distracting.
involves more people in the sales journey,
Yes.
more
Yes.
approvals,
Yes.
and then
Think of
if
it
it's
as
an
it's
enterprise, it's typically, oh, but we have like 15 vendors and Duck
Totally.
Soup could do this and some other thing in insurance could do that, and so there, and we could, we have licenses of Claude and They can do that, and right. So that is that what you're seeing as a
100%. It's basically like once you understand what their pull is, what they're trying to do in blocked, that tells you exactly what you need to pitch, how you need to pitch it. And if you add anything other than that, if you talk about your vision, if you talk about other features they didn't ask about, what that does is that increases the surface area of things they need to understand, which again, in physics terms, increases the friction, increases the drag, reduces the aerodynamics of the deal. And so demos are like really dangerous.
Yeah.
And then once you've scoped down to exactly the shape of the thing they need, the thing that's gonna get them unblocked, then the question is, what's the purpose of a demo or of a pilot even? And
Yeah.
what they found was that they were doing pilots for 3 months to see if users would use it, right? And see if users liked it. But that's not the relevant thing to be testing, because if it actually reduces the amount of time from 40 hours to 10 minutes or whatever, right? The users are going to be forced to use it. They're like, there's no question of whether the users will be demanded to use, they will be required to use it. And so the only thing they actually need to prove in a pilot is, right, like the accuracy or whatever, something really small, which can be done with one expert in 24 hours or less. And so they went from these kind of like, so you can see the entire physics of the sales process was non-aerodynamic because of how they were pitching, because they weren't focused on pull, because they were pitching the broad platform, because they were proposing a pilot that was focused on irrelevant things. And like, it is just tightening all of that to be focused on pull is like what causes the sales process to compress.
Interesting. It like I it almost feels like the same things that help you expand in a client will hurt you when you're trying to lend it.
Yes.
And so if you're trying to sell too much, too broad, you kind of have that issue. But before the call, you and I, we had this chat where you, let's say you know the client well, you the kind of the persona, the for lack of a better word, persona, right? I know you don't like that word, but like you know the type of organization that you think is like your ideal potential client. You've have a few success stories of where the pull framework has worked for previous clients, and you want to sh you, but you don't know which one of those will be priority, right? Which is pretty accurate in many organizations, and certainly if you're going up in the organization, the likelihood that you may have more than one ways to get to the top priority is higher. And so how do you find that you could not limit that meeting and not get into like this too discovery vibe where like I think people like immediately like get all sensitive, oh now you're gonna get discovered, and like so how do you overcome that objection without kind of pigeonholing yourself to the one solution that that person thinks of at that moment in time? And it turns out that actually, well, I like, yeah, it's a priority, but it's still too much effort to bring in one organization that could only solve this one burning platform for problem, right? Or burning project right now, right? Because I think the larger the organization, the more likely they have a portfolio of related projects as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you what doesn't work, which is, you're typically taught to like have a fixed list of discovery questions, or you follow like a kind of BANT kind of thing,
Yeah,
or
BANT
medic
or
or
whatever.
MedVec.
Yeah, medic. Yeah,
One of
whatever. It's the
those
flavor of
where,
the day.
so when you start with BANT, right, and saying, so what's your budget? Like, who the heck are you, right? So
Yeah,
you
yeah,
don't
yeah,
so
yeah.
you're going to get people defensive. It's going to feel kind of like a colonoscopy
Yeah,
in
yeah,
discovery. And so
yeah.
what I find is that you just have to ask about, like, hey, what is it that you are prioritizing that caused you to want to take this call that you thought
Yeah.
we might be able to help with? And then you can kind of poke at that a little bit. Okay, cool. Help me understand. Is that actually the thing, or are there other priorities that are more important, or da 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 da, right? And so you can
So
usually
you
get
keep
to.
like being open-ended until they, you know, you get anything else, and then you say, okay, so just in the, you know, you're a busy person, so rank these for me, right? Like, which one is like your gun to the head? What's the number one thing you need to solve?
Or like, what's the thing you thought we'd be able to help with? You were hoping we'd be able to help with. What are you prioritizing? That, and like, is it that important, or is it a kind of side thing? What I'm not trying to do is I'm not trying to create urgency here, because I've found, you probably found the same thing, is like, I can't convince anybody of anything. So I can't like, I'm not going to be able to convince somebody to drop a priority their number one priority right now in exchange for buying my product. Like, that's just absurd. So it's just,
You
oh, the
seem
goal
very
is just.
persuasive, you know, are you but it's hard, I let's agree. But
No, I.
how's the so okay, fair enough. So but look, these people are meeting you for the first time. And you may be consultative and friendly, but like they're not gonna go and say, you know, Rob, actually, my number one priority is that I need to get promoted because I need to, you know, I have a wife, two kids, you know, tuition, a mistress, whatever. Like you know, they're going off on their, you know, they're not saying that, but they're thinking that, right? Like there's something that's underneath, and typically that's kind of a little taboo unless you talk to like hardcore enterprise sales people who will say like, yeah, like this is how we win, right? Like we just get you on stage, we get you promoted, we get you like an article in magazine, and you know, and then you're kind of and you win. Like if you're in marketing, we help you win a bunch of marketing awards. And then you're famous and you get your next gig or get promoted into the organization. How does like have you found a way to uncover some of these motivations as well?
So I th think of those as second order things, right? Or like underlying things. So like, right, I'm trying to do the so I'm just going to describe the project on my to-do list that made this podcast relevant. So I'm trying to explain the pull framework to as many founders as possible so that people will stop suffering in the pain cave of not of pushing a product that so that I will feel like I right, and
You matter.
so
You
I will
matter.
feel like
You've
I
created many
matter,
products.
so that my finite time on this earth is not wasted, so that right, like da da da, right, and there's all of those, but the core thing, like, yes, it's important to know all of the so that's that come after, but there has to be a kind of somewhat practical
The first one,
one. And if you understand that, then you can kind of get into the motivations when you take them out for drinks or when you fly them out or what, like whatever it is. And you can, right, like you want to massage the product, the experience, based on what all of the so that's are for that person, because those are really going to be the motivating thing. And you don't want to fight against one of the so that's that cause, which will make it feel not right to them for reasons they can't really articulate.
And then, so for you in this, in the case, since you are just published a book, by the way, everybody will kind of do a link to your website, but check out the book. It's great. And it's available on Audible. If you're a busy, founder, like doesn't have time to read, no excuse. You could listen. But if you're, you know, like if we go a little step further, like let's say I bought into your framework, Rob. I have a lot of options because you know we started with a horizontal product, which a lot of people do, right? Great technology. We have a few success stories. Now I need to quickly prioritize for myself, where do we find more of these people who have pool that fits us? How do we go about it? Let's say like a classical example is B2B, something that you could, you know, you have let's say 10K price point. So you could theoretically talk to someone at least on the phone or on Zoom. What have you found works? Like in your case, like I could have I happened to discover your book, so I probably like it was I could have guessed that if my business was the podcast, right, itself, like I would have guessed that you would be open because you're publishing a book for a reason, right? You want to
Right.
get your ideas out there. So, what's the equivalent of that for most businesses? Like, how do we find that pattern of where we interrupt you or we spot where you are like kind of figuring you could be the type of person that could be having pull?
So there's the stage where you have revenue, you're growing, but you have like a bunch of different possible case studies that are like
Yes.
all different kinds of things. But I'd say the first most important thing, if you take one thing away from this stage, it is avoid the whiteboard. What's going to happen at the whiteboard, that you're a smart person, you're going to go there and write out all the possibilities on the
Right.
whiteboard just from theory, right?
Right.
And right, that didn't work well in continental philosophy. It doesn't work well for startups. And so where you have to start is from your actual customer data. And so what I would do is I'd look across your current customers and specifically focus on two kinds of customers. One is the one that bought weirdly fast, and second is the one that ghosted you and then bought weirdly fast, like months or years later. And
Okay.
if you write out those, what you're gonna and you're gonna kind of want to go back to them and talk to them and figure out what was their pull at the time. Watch the sales calls, try to figure that out. From that, you're gonna come up with hypotheses of like, oh, I think there are actually two kinds of pull, three kinds of pull that we're experiencing. And then you go and say, okay, what I'm going to do is that's a hypothesis. It's based on this customer or these three customers. And then you just go out and test that in a set of five sales calls where you're like, all right, here's my hypothesis. I'm just going to use the case studies of these ones and go show it to other people who I think look exactly like them and see how they behave. And those people should rip the product out of your hands. If they don't, something is wrong.
And the one that bought it all of a sudden after ghosting you is this is where you're trying to figure out what was the
What
compelling
changed?
unblock. Yeah, what's the change?
And what you don't want to hear is like, so there's the side of like, oh yeah, your product's value does like you don't want to hear stuff about your product. You want to
ROI.
hear stuff about, yeah, you want to hear ROI. You want to hear
Yeah.
stuff that is not about your product at all that caused your product to be relevant. So like, oh, so actually what happened then is we had hired this creative strategist who was doing da 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 da, but was stuck on this. It's like, okay, cool. That's what pull was. Not that made your product relevant, made them pull it in.
Rob, when you think about regulated, like we talked about the enterprise inertia kind of surface area exposing, like the area that is the highest in the enterprise's regulated enterprise, maybe some government thing where there is obviously the once you get in and solving a meaningful problem, because of that friction, you're in for a long time and you could really build a great business and it probably have a lot of room to expand into adjacent areas. But that initial inertia tends to be higher by virtue of risk aversion of the industry and the users. What have you found? Where have you found pattern breakers where extra like insurances that was a great example, but like where are you finding the sort of 3 weeks validation versus 3 months because of just the nature of how things get done in that organization or in that whole industry?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And then this it's important to come back to physics here
Yeah.
because there are the two forces, right? There's the person trying to get the champion internally exerting force to make a deal happen, and then there's the friction against the deal happening in terms of all of
Yeah.
the policies and whatever. What I've found is actually in enterprise in regulated spaces, the yes, there is more friction against a deal happening because of all the reasons. But the actual hard part is finding somebody who wants to exert the force internally to
Yeah.
do anything. It's way easier to do nothing in those cases. And so you could just imagine a bunch of people who don't have a lot of projects they actually need to do, And if they're going to do a project, their existing options are generally good enough. And so they kind of envision the whole the people just in equilibrium, not really needing to change. Or if they want to change, they look at the amount of effort it's going to take, and they're like, "Eh, I could just right." Like my wife works in a university, and it's
Yeah.
just you know
It's
it's just kind
fine.
of
Yeah. So it's almost
everyone's
the
just
opposite of a
coasting.
startup. In a startup, it's
Yes.
going to have too many projects. You know, the hardest part is to get to the priority list.
Yes.
In
Yes.
the more regulated, calmer environment, there's not enough. There's stuff to do, but there's no burning projects that somebody
And
is
what you,
willing
the
to
and so
shake
the
the
hard
system
part
for.
is actually finding the person who has pull in those organizations. Because there's, like you meant, there's change makers internally. There's the person who came from McKinsey or whatever and is like, what on earth are we doing here? Like, I, right? And it's finding those, that winds up
That
being the
could still
harder part.
navigate internally, but it has a
Yes.
sort of like firepower under their ass to speak to use a crass expression that just they need to
Yes.
get stuff done. They're a change agent of sorts in
And what I
that.
found is that in those organizations, you either find that kind of person somewhere in the org, or you go as high as humanly possible. Because the people at the top are often just like, they're looking and they're like, it's going to take me so much effort to change XYZ, but I want to change. And then you come in and they'll be like, okay, cool, you are our change. So.
Rob, I think this is wonderful. As you could see, I'm speaking to our audience, I'm like super interested in the framework, your learnings from it. I think it is a counterintuitive to conventional wisdom, and I think it has tons of applications. I'm thinking of how I can use it in bringing Relay to into the world inside these regulated industries, which have really important ideas, but sometimes they get stuck and don't see the light of days. And I think this is a call to all change makers and all entrepreneurs who want to drive change. Check out what Rob is doing. Rob, where can people find you?
I am at robsnyder.org.
All right. And what's you've got given us a few mic drop moments, but like as we wrap up, what's the one thought that you want to leave us with?
Yeah, if you don't find pull, nothing else matters. If you do find pull, everything else solves itself.
Beautiful. Rob Snyder, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alex.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, RELYTO.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on Relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.